June 30th marks the two-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc. And if you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc., please consider making a special anniversary contribution. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make a special anniversary gift by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
On the one hand, they couldn't think of a circumstance in which this procedure was the absolutely only procedure that could be used in a given case. But second, on the other hand, that they could think of circumstances in which it was the medically best or medically most appropriate procedure, that it was the procedure with the least risk attached to it.
That's Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan speaking today at her confirmation hearing for the Supreme Court. She was asked about a memo that she wrote during the Clinton administration about partial birth abortion. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about comments made today in her nomination hearings by Elena Kagan on partial birth abortion and that memo during the Clinton administration. Clark Forsythe of Americans United for Life will be our guest for the first 10 minutes of this hour. Then a little bit later, we're going to continue our series, actually part three of our four-part weekly series on the miracles of Jesus. Today, miracles in Luke's gospel. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. You can email us here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. Clark Forsythe is a regular guest. He's past president and senior counsel of Americans United for Life. He's author of the book, Politics for the Greatest Good. Clark, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be with you.
Her comments there were brief, but I noticed she did not use the term abortion or partial birth abortion or even late-term abortion. Why do you think that is?
Well, it neutralizes it. It makes it so antiseptic just to call it a procedure, and she doesn't want to call it what Congress called it, partial birth abortion.
Do we know, after hearing what she said this morning before the U.S. Senate, the nomination hearings, where she may or may not stand on the procedure of partial birth abortion legally?
Well, I think it's pretty clear. There were some serious, significant developments today and yesterday. And yesterday she told Senator Feinstein that basically she believed that the Supreme Court's decisions required the unlimited abortion rights and virtually no regulation whatsoever. And then today, Senator Hatch and Senator Graham raised the question of partial birth abortion and her involvement in modifying a policy statement by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which was very pro-partial birth abortion and which was influential in affecting the courts in striking down partial birth abortion.
What is so controversial surrounding this memo that she wrote? She couldn't recall specifically writing it, but it was in her handwriting. What's so controversial about that?
Well, back in 1996, she worked in the Clinton White House, and at that time there was a federal bill to prohibit partial birth abortion was passed by Congress. Pressure on President Clinton to veto it or sign it, he was moving to and wanted to veto it, and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which is an influential national medical organization, came up with a policy statement which said that they could identify no circumstances under which the procedure would be the only option to save the life or health of the woman. Kagan got a hold of this in the White House, said this would be a disaster because it undercuts the president and undercuts the president's veto. And she personally wrote an amendment to that language, which then added, however, it may be the best or most appropriate in a particular circumstance to save the life or preserve the health of a woman. That was a policy amendment. There was no medical evidence, no peer-reviewed medical evidence to support that. But she wrote that, and in December of '96, and the American College adopted that wholesale, adopted her language, her amendment to their scientific policy statement, medical policy statement, and released it to the public in January of 1997 as their policy statement. That was heavily relied upon by a federal court in striking down the federal ban that President Bush signed after his election, and it was relied upon by the Supreme Court in striking down the Nebraska statute in 2000. So it was very influential, and they relied upon her amendment did not know that she was involved at all or that she had amended it, thinking that it was simply a scientific inquiry.
So in other words, her own opinion, in effect, not a medical opinion, but her own opinion, was incorporated into what was otherwise being received as the carefully considered opinions of the medical community on this issue.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And her involvement was never known by the judges, the judge who struck down the federal law. In fact, the judge said that the commented on the integrity of the ACOG's review, saying that they hadn't talked with any outside people, and relied upon it because of its "quote unquote" medical or scientific integrity. And in addition, there's simply no medical studies that would support her amendment, or would support the notion that. That partial birth abortion was less risky for a woman in any particular circumstance.
All right. Was she asked at all in the course of the last 2 days about Roe v. Wade?
She was. She was asked by Senator Feinstein yesterday, and she basically told Senator Feinstein that she believed that the Supreme Court's abortion decisions required that any regulation, state or federal, of abortion must have an exception for basically the emotional well-being of the patient, and that if any regulation, such as involving a parent in a minor's abortion decision, might affect the emotional well-being or the emotion of a minor, that the regulation couldn't be enforced. And that in effect means that no regulation of abortion, no limits on public funding, no partial birth abortion prohibition or regulation, no parental notice or consent law, no informed consent law can possibly stand. And was very significant and is very troubling.
In this respect, it strikes me she might be actually more forthcoming on that subject than many other Supreme Court nominees have been during the nomination process.
Well, she endorsed the broadest view, but she hid behind this so-called health exception. Well, what does health mean? I mean, if you say, well, I think a regulation should be sensitive to the health of the mother, you might think, well, that's really significant. Yeah, I agree. But in the Supreme Court has adopted its own definition of health, and that definition is that health means all factors, physical, emotional, psychological, familial, relevant to the well-being of the patient. So it basically means emotional well-being. Well, that's very different than a significant health threat or a significant health condition or a significant health risk, which we associate with health. And so she really hid behind that language, and it was not clearly laid out on the table during the hearings. And that, too, is troubling.
Do you expect her to be approved by the U.S. Senate?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. I think this the questions by Senator Hatch and Senator Graham today about her amendment of this medical organization policy statement, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists policy statement, is very serious. She just this afternoon told Senator Coburn that she wasn't sure if she agreed with the natural rights of the Declaration of Independence, whether there really were any natural rights preceding the state. I think that's a very serious development. And her endorsement of unlimited abortion rights, I think all of these are serious. And Senator Coburn himself said, he thought it was too soon to tell, and it would have to see how these developments play out. But her amendment of the ACOG policy statement is very serious, and I think it's too soon to tell. I think that these are significant developments, and we'll have to see what happens over the next 2 days. There'll be continued hearings tomorrow, and we'll have to see how things develop.
This is kind of odd because when her name was first mentioned by President Barack Obama as the nominee, there was some press speculation that she was kind of middle of the road on the whole issue of life and abortion. Is there any doubt now where Elena Kagan stands on the issue of abortion?
No doubt in my mind, and I think her testimony has made it absolutely clear. There should be no doubt if someone reads the testimony and listens to the testimony as to where she stands. She is, will be as radical as any current justice on unlimited abortion rights and hostile to any state or federal regulations, and that's clear from her testimony over the last 3 days.
Clark Forsyth is past president and senior counsel for Americans United for Life. He's author of the book Politics for the Greatest Good. You'll find a link to Americans United for Life and to Clark's book, Politics for the Greatest Good, under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Thanks, Clark.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, we continue our series that we're doing this summer. It's actually just a little series, four weekly parts on the miracles of Jesus. We decided with Dr. Peter Scare to break those parts down in a logical kind of gospel way. That is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We've done Matthew, Mark, and today, Wednesday, June the 30th, it's time to get to the miracles in Luke's gospel. Well, Luke's gospel's a doozy when it comes to miracles. The other gospel writers have kind of structured their miracles in a certain way to fit into their story. We'll find out whether or not Luke does the same with Dr. Peter Scare in just a minute.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
If you're a pastor or layperson in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we have some timely resources for you. The leadership of the LCMS is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. You'll find show transcripts about these proposed changes and an updated list of questions for President Gerald Kishnick's task force. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand.
LCMS, Inc. canceled this. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with couple if you're a double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out, www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen on Demand page and click Share This.